This is the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another special guest series here on the Authentic Persuasion Show. My name again is Jason Cutter. Very excited for my guest this time. I say that every time. I'm always excited. I think these conversations are fun. We haven't even had it yet, and I know it's going to be a blast. If you're tuning into this podcast, then you know the mission that I'm on is to help fill the world with authentic persuaders and to shift the way sales is viewed, because a lot of times it's seen as something gross and a dirty profession that people don't want to get into or deal with. And obviously that doesn't have to be the case, and people could be sales professionals. And this show is to help kind of provide that vehicle for you, whether you're in sales leadership, you own a company, you want to create a sales team. I'm so glad that you're here. So on today's episode, we're just going to kick off the three-part series. If you're familiar in season 7, then you know how this works. I have Dr. Stephanie Boyer on the show. So she is from Bryant University. She's also the co-founder of the Rainmakers Program. She's a TEDxer. She's an AMA Sales Professor of the Year. She's a sales innovation expert, Forbes Next 1000. She, again, runs the sales program at Bryant University in Rhode Island and does a lot of speaking, a lot of engaging, and really a big champion for both sales, but also the higher education sales programs out there to help shift the way sales is done, which is why I'm very excited to have her here. Dr. Stephanie, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Oh, thank you so much. I have been looking forward to coming and visiting you on the show for quite some time now, Jason.
And I will mention it in the outro when we talk about kind of like how people can connect, but I'll spoil it here. If people want to connect with you, they can find you on LinkedIn. And anyone who is following you on LinkedIn already, or if somebody does, they'll see that intro and what I just covered in no way does it justice for all the stuff that you do and that you publish and all the sales competitions and all the things that you are doing, traveling all over and speaking to different groups and companies and associations and everywhere. And I just think it's amazing, you know, that you and that group of sales professors that are, you know, doing everything you can to get more of this out there about the fact that there's sales education programs that people don't even realize exist, right?
There are so many. It's shocking. Every single day I talk to somebody and they say, I didn't even know you could study sales in college. And it's like, oh my gosh, there are thousands of students studying sales in college and they want to go into sales. And so when all of these sales leaders say, I don't know where to find new salespeople, it's like, look in the Sales Education Foundation, talk to your local sales program. We want to talk to you, you know? So yes, we are out there.
Which is one of those interesting things. And like we were talking right before the show about the podcast and what I started with, I wanted to have these fun conversations with sales professors like yourself in the beginning of season 7 has evolved into, I just want to amplify this and get more and more of this out there because people don't realize this exists. And I was one of those people. I wrote my book and I was in the editing phase. And I had a paragraph in there that said, you can't go to school and take a class on sales and get a degree in sales. And I literally had to change it. And that was in 2020. And these programs have been around, you know, Dr. Terry Lowe was involved with these programs 25 years ago. And most people don't even know that.
2020? Gosh, yeah. I thought it was 2018. I don't know why.
Yeah, I started writing it in 2018 and then I was in the final editing and then publishing in 2020. And then I was like, wait, these programs exist. And then, you know, exploring this. And so a lot of people don't realize it. And we'll talk about that in the final part where we talk about the future of sales. Where I would love to start, and, you know, this episode is about authenticity, is take us all back to you starting in some kind of sales role prior to entering in higher education, what that looked like and really what you thought about sales then versus what you think about sales now. And it might be the same or it might be wildly different.
You know, it's funny because I sold all the time. I was always selling. I was always doing a fundraiser. I always was really just motivated to go out and sell. It's almost like I had this zen place. I remember I grew up in San Diego, California, and I was a Girl Scout. My parents did not take my Girl Scout cookies flyer in to get people to buy them. I wanted to win the little stuffed animal otter, you know, with 300 boxes sold. But the way that I did that is I would just walk around in the neighborhood, and I would end up like five neighborhoods away. And someone would say, like, it's really dark. Did you want to use our phone and call your parents? And then my parents would come and pick me up wherever I was. You know, several, like, I don't know, this is over three decades ago. Gosh. But, you know, when I started selling like that, you know, I didn't have any hesitation. I wasn't afraid of rejection. I was really excited about it and just getting out there and trying to accomplish something. And as I took various different jobs, from, you know, being a hostess, from being an actual waitress in a restaurant, selling financial services, even working at United States Customs and being a firefighter, I realized that a lot of these selling skills that I learned, even as a child, they continued to persist throughout my life. Like even being a firefighter and, you know, working on an ambulance, you have to gain people's trust in the very beginning to let you know what's happening with them in this emergency situation. And people don't always want to be honest with you about what they were doing to get into that emergency that they're in. So yes, it really, I think every single job that I've had is a selling job, even if I wasn't selling a product or service.
Well, and I think that's what's interesting, because I said that for years on the podcast, that everything in life is sales. And the closing line was, and people remember the experience that you gave them. And it is interesting, because it feels like, and it's true, everything in life is some level of sales, or everyone's in sales when you take away, again, the gross, dirty part of it, like I said in the very beginning of the intro, and you look at it as persuasion and or an act of service and the kind of stuff that I know will come up in this. And it's also interesting, because I had a guest years ago on the show who was in the military and then was in the police before going into consulting. And he said the same thing, right? Like if you're a police officer, like you want to be really good at sales so that you can de-escalate things and get people to do the things that you want them to do just to make the situation better.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. And I, you know, the mindset that I have when I think about sales is really all about helping people. And so it makes sense that if you're a firefighter, if you're selling financial services or a waitress, like you are helping people all the time. And if you can just have that mindset, I think we can just do selling so much better.
What point in your career, at whatever, sales or higher education, did you realize that's what it was about? I have this sense that probably for at least some point you were on autopilot, just doing it and just thinking, this is what I do. And then at some point you might have looked at it and went, oh, wait a second, I am in sales, or this is sales and this means something different than what I was taught in sales.
I thought from the very beginning, it was really about building rapport and getting people to like you and to buy into you, and then to buy into your company, and then finally to buy into your product. But then over time, watching people sell as an educator, really, and training people how to sell as a consultant, I really started to appreciate and understand that's really what it's about. And, you know, you don't have to try to just to win somebody over because they like you. It's really winning someone over because you're helping them, and you can make them look like a hero in their organization. So the more you can shine a light on other people and make them successful, the more valuable you actually become.
Where is that balance then of, you know, the Bob Berg, you know, people will buy from people they know, like, and trust when all things are even. In what you were just saying, where, you know, maybe less of that focus on the rapport and getting to like me, and more of the I'm here to help you. Like, where have you found that balance? Or, you know, this kind of jumps ahead, but dealing with your students, how do you teach them to find that authentic balance between the two?
Well, I think it really starts with just, you know, trying to be of service, be helpful, and don't think about when you go into a situation, what am I going to get out of this? It's how am I going to help someone here? And I learned, you know, as a teenager, if I was having a really bad day, the one thing I could rely on to feel better was just to help somebody. So the worst case scenario, you go out and you help someone, you feel better about yourself and you have a better day because of it. But at the end of the day, you're probably going to be able to make a sale if that is what your intention is and there's some alignment there.
And so with the authenticity piece and the being of service and, you know, that balance with the rapport, like, did you ever have challenges in sales, let's say at an organization where they wanted you to try something different, or did you always have kind of free rein, you know, if you were financial services and maybe mostly on your own?
Oh, no, I did not have free rein. And, you know, sometimes I would totally crash and burn. And I think it did come down to some of that authenticity of like, follow this script exactly and say all these things and this is going to make you win. And I'd feel like, gosh, you know, that does not sound like me. I wouldn't talk like that. It doesn't feel right. Or you get too pressured to hit certain numbers and you get stressed out. Right. And so that can certainly be a challenge. But kind of coming back to what you were saying about, you know, helping students and finding that authenticity, some of the things that I have my students or people that I'm training or coaching or talking to think about is really looking at starting with what it is that is your authentic self, right? And so if you're coming and you're thinking about, okay, well, what are my values? Like, what are the things that are important to me? And then looking back at what are some of my experiences? Like, what have I actually done? And then looking into the talents of what am I really good at? And if you can find alignment between all of these, that sweet spot in the middle of all of that, that really is that authentic self. And so for my students, I have them try to lead with that, to really understand who they are, and just to be true to themselves. But some of them really struggle to figure out, oh, what is my authentic self? And when we talk about authenticity, how do I post on social media to be authentic? Yeah. So, right. You know, you have to start somewhere. And I think that's a really good place to start. And you have a whole list of these three different categories and finding where they align, that helps.
Yeah. And I know, like, I'll just speak for myself and use myself as an example. 18, 19, 20, 20 year old version of me had no idea, right? Just late bloomer, no idea, not aware, just kind of like going through early life, no idea where things were going. Like, if you're like, hey, what's your authentic self? And what do you get? Like, I could not even imagine. So how do you tackle that? How do you help? Because again, you're dealing with students, they're generally younger, but this applies to anyone who's in sales as well. Like, how do we apply this? And is how do you figure that out? What are some ways you found works well? Again, for aligning, there's the authentic side, there's who you are, there's being transparent while also being professional in a sales setting.
What's fascinating, I think, right now is that often people, and especially my students, they don't want to brag about themselves. So they really struggle with that. What am I talented at? Like, what are my talents? What am I really good at? And if you ask them, sometimes they're like, I'm not good at anything. I was like, come on, you're in a great college. You must be good at something. And they feel so uncomfortable thinking about those things. And then, of course, if they don't even want to think about that, imagine them trying to communicate those things. And so we talk about, okay, if you're going to go on a job interview, you want to get a job, and you're only going to get a job if someone sees that you're going to add value to the organization. So what value are you going to add to the organization? And they really do struggle with this. And so then we say, okay, let's take ourselves out of the equation, because sometimes it's hard for us to see ourselves from our own perspective. Let's look at our friends. If you were going to ask your friends, what are you really good at? What would they say? Or if your friends are often coming to you for advice, what are they asking for advice about? Like, if they have a problem, what are they sharing with you? And what do they need from you? And then they can start to think about that. And they're like, oh, well, you know, I actually get a lot of questions about, you know, relationships and, you know, some challenging things that are happening with this or that, right? And then they can start to talk about it. And once they get going, then they're really on a roll.
How much of that do you think is just also the way humans can be, right? Even if someone's like not young, they're younger, they're not a student in college, right? I feel like I've met other people like that in other stages of their life where they don't know what they're good at, or they don't think they're good at anything. They don't realize the talents and abilities they have and where that can apply. Like, I just wonder how much of that is just beyond, you know, maybe that stage in life, or even just in the college environment.
it is far beyond college. And some of the research that I've been doing, I'm finding that it's actually a much bigger problem for women. So women are often feeling like I'm not good enough. And especially when it comes to sales, often they think, oh, I'm not going to be good at this job. They have a distorted view of what selling is. They've mm-hmm. seen in Hollywood how it's portrayed. And so then they yep. think, well, if that sells, I'm definitely not going to do it. And it's not for me. And I'm not going to be good at that. I'm not going to be good at trying to manipulate somebody into going to sales. So we have to kind of deconstruct their understanding of what selling is and helping them to understand that selling is really about helping people. And what we found is that if we can really support and build up the confidence in those people that are really challenged with that confidence in the beginning, they're some of the best sellers because they have a lot of empathy and they're really great at listening as well.
That's what I've always found, is that if somebody wants to succeed in a sales role and can separate what they think about sales from the boiler room movies of the world, right? And what they see or what they experience, and they're like, I don't want to do that. They realize what they could, how sales should be. And then they put in the effort and they focus on it, especially from the empathy side, then they're always amazing. And women who get that are always amazing and usually outpace all the men, because as men, you know, everyone's expecting us to be bad salespeople when we call somebody, but not the women out there, because again, there's no women in boiler room. And so they're not just preconceived ideas about that. But I think for anyone in that, right? Like, I think that's why me being raised by two anti-salespeople and having a degree in marine biology, because I chose sharks over people, made me way more empathetic when I finally did realize what sales was about. I was like, oh yeah, and I know why I'm here. To help people, not just for my own interest. And I think that's a big key. Yeah,
exactly. And so from the research, we were seeing that women were coming in and their levels of confidence were low. Their levels of empathy were high. And for men, it was the exact opposite. So they came in with high levels of confidence, but then their empathy was really low. So they came in, they're like, I can do this. I'm great at this. And then that would be really even more intimidating to the women that were like, I can't do this. Well, he's got it figured out. Meanwhile, the women were winning the competitions. I don't know if it's because they were so much harder on themselves or what it was, but we did some training for the two groups, and it actually brought everyone's levels up. So what do you think, what kind of training do you think we did in order to improve everyone's abilities, increase the confidence and the empathy to get them on the same level?
If I know you, and I think I know what the answer is, it's probably some role playing.
We started doing improv training. So yeah, I mean,
nice. To an extent,
right? And it was interesting because for the men, the improv was helping them with the perspective taking and giving them a heightened sense of empathy. And for the women, we were putting them on the spot and putting them in all these anxiety inducing circumstances where they would they would survive, and they came out okay. And it really built up their confidence and their courage to just go with it, even if they didn't know exactly what the right answer was. And at the end of the day, none of us know what the right answer is when we're in a call. Like, we don't have a multiple choice, you know, guide in front of us that has a for sure right answer. If we say the right thing, that will make the sale. So we found that to be a huge value to the students.
Well, and having not officially done any improv or gone to any classes or anything like that, knowing what I know of it, I think one of the biggest things, which is where it's so useful in sales, is to be really successful in improv, where it is effective and good for the audience, means you actually have to listen to what the other person's saying and then go from there, right? And so many people in sales and in life are too busy thinking about what they're going to say next, and they're not actually listening. So they're just cutting off all of that part, and then we've all had that experience talking to somebody. And so I could see how that improv, it's like, hey, you've got to respond, which means you have to listen and then get comfortable with being uncomfortable and not knowing what to do next until it's time.
Exactly. There are so many parallels between the gaps of knowledge and experience and abilities for people in sales and the types of skills that improv can really build. So not great to just use improv as it stands alone, but when you adapt it to train and build on selling skills, oh my gosh, it's not only is it so helpful, but it's really fun. And yeah, you know, everyone's laughing. I mean, sometimes they're cackling, and they're just having a good time. And then their defense mechanisms are down, and so they're really leaning in and being open to learning when you do those strategies.
I love it. It sounds very familiar to my experiences with Toastmasters and going to that for a few years. And there's the prepared speeches part of Toastmasters, and then there's the impromptu, they call them table topics, where you just like, here's a topic, now talk about it for 60 seconds, and you just have to wing it. And you get really comfortable with being uncomfortable in front of a group of people, and then it makes sales way easier. So with your students, when we talk about that, how do they take that? Are they craving and excited for this kind of authentic part that you're talking about and helping them figure out their strengths, maybe versus what they thought sales would be? Or like, are they, you know, kind of reserved and just thinking, oh, just teach me the strategies and tactics of sales?
Usually in the very beginning of the sales class, unless someone comes in and they know that they want to learn about sales and they're on the sales team and they're like, I've been waiting for this moment, right? And I do get some of those. But usually they're really hesitant. And when you are really learning and you're really shifting your perspective from what you thought it was, so like you're really making a change, often it's uncomfortable. It's almost painful. And we're fighting it because it's challenging the way that we've always seen the world or the way that we've always behaved. And so often in that very beginning, and we're doing the improv training, we might be doing some role plays, there's a lot of resistance, right? There's a lot of like, I don't want to embarrass myself. I don't like this. This is hard. I don't really know what I bring to the table. And it's just, it's, you know, self-discovery, all of this. And it kind of challenges them. So there is a bit of resistance. And so what I find that helps the most is when we're doing the improv and we're making everybody fail from the very beginning and letting them know that they're in a safe environment. And like, we want them to fail. We want them to fail early and often. And what, when they're failing, they're learning so much, but it's okay. Like, they don't need to be embarrassed because it's a no-win situation that they're in. We're setting them up to fail. And then they're like, oh, okay. It's okay. Like, we're normalizing that. And we're helping them to be able to, instead of thinking, I can't do this, I don't know what I'm supposed to do, to be able to get rid of that and to be able to think on their feet. So instead of thinking those thoughts, they already know, oh, I'm supposed to fail. So let me just say anything anyways. And then that helps them to unlock parts of their mind to be able to think when they're in anxiety inducing situations. But they're always, it's almost always resistance. Huge resistance in the beginning. But then after just a few lessons, you know, they start to open up and they realize like, it's not that bad. And even in my reviews, I get students saying things like, I've never felt so comfortable failing. So yes, setting them up in a safe environment and understanding that the whole point is to help them to succeed. That is really the key.
Well, and this will segue into, you know, the other parts of our conversation. But one of the things that's interesting is if we think about what you're doing and you're in an academic higher education setting, when somebody's learning math and they've been in school for a long time prior to getting to you in all kinds of subjects that are not sales, and is used to this, like, there's one right way, you do things this way, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's science, it's English, it's math. And it's like, you're not supposed to fail. Like, you can maybe get it wrong, but you better learn it and you better pass these tests. And then you get to something like sales, which, you know, is this art/science, but it's just like this, it's way more than here's the right answer and say this one right thing. Mm-hmm. Then, like you said, it's about being comfortable with being uncomfortable. And that's okay in this kind of environment, just like they would if they were in like a theater class or an art class or something that's more than just linear, formulaic, like math and science.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And so where for like last question here, what we're talking about authenticity, I know that you have a book, The Little Black Book of Social Selling. Anything from that specifically for, you know, creating and having that authentic voice and the stuff that you found works well beyond what we've already talked about?
Yes. One of the things to do, the very first step of the book, it's 30 steps. And that first step is to figure out who their authentic self is. You know, like, what are they, who are they? What are they bringing to the table? What do they want to accomplish? Like, what is it that they want to get out of posting on social media and using those outlets, especially like LinkedIn? And the next step is thinking about, okay, if I know who I am and who my authentic self is, the next step is really thinking about like, well, who would really appreciate that? Who needs that? What problem am I actually solving by being who I am? And who can I actually reach out to that would be interested in hearing about this? Like, who has a problem I can solve? Who has authority to make a decision over this? What is my goal? Do I want someone to buy something from me? Am I trying to educate and get the word out? Like, what do I really want? And so I think a lot of it just comes down to strategy of like, who am I authentically? What do I want to do with this? Am I trying to monetize this? Who would be the right audience? And then just getting organized, right? Trying to understand, what are other people in the space talking about? What do the people that I want to reach, what do they care about? Like, just trying to understand the people so that you can talk to them where they are, and coming up with a plan that you can follow, and not overwhelming yourself and trying to be something you're not and posting, you know, 10 times a day and engaging constantly and trying to do everything else. Right. Just thinking about like, who am I? What do I really want? What would make me happy? And executing a plan that is going to get them there.
I love it. I think that's great. As we close out this episode on authenticity, before we jump into the next one on part two, for people who want to connect with you, again, I mentioned this in the beginning, but you are very active on LinkedIn, so people can find you on there. It's Dr. Stephanie Boyer, and it's S-T-E-F-A-N-I-E. So Dr. Stephanie Boyer, it's really easy to find you. Search Bryant University and they'll find you. And then also, we haven't talked about it, it'll probably come up in part three, maybe in part two, is your Rainmakers program. But people tuning in right now, they can find that, and it's rnmkrs.com. The links will be in the show notes. Dr. Stephanie, appreciate you being here and sharing all this, and super excited. We still have two more parts of the conversation to go.
Super happy to be here with you, Jason.
Thanks. And for everyone tuning in, please make sure to check out the next couple of parts as we go through the rest of this conversation. We're going to talk about persuasion, the future of sales, which again, she's doing a lot of great things with AI and technology and advancing that for sales as a whole. So make sure to tune into those. And I appreciate everyone being a part of this. Again, the goal of this is to help shift the way sales is viewed from that dirty word and the things that even she was talking about with some of her students to it being a sales profession, which I know we'll get into in part three. And I appreciate everyone being here, and thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.